Wow. Hey, Rashi. Rashi, what are you eating?
Crispy rolls.
Oh, man, that looks great. Do we have any more?
Nope.
Wait, you didn't save me one?
Not one.
Aw, those are for everybody, you know?
Yeah, they're for everybody, and I decided you could all have some yesterday, but none of you had them, and so I just went ahead and ate them up.
I guess I'll just eat some nice, healthy grapes and bananas.
Yeah, you go ahead and enjoy that.
You wanna swap? You have any left that you want to swap for your Swiss roll?
Nope. You go ahead and enjoy your grapes. I'm going to go back and eat these Swiss cake rolls, which do no longer exist.
Hi, this is Paul Dini.
And this is Misty Lee.
No, actually, it's not Misty Lee at all. Misty Lee is AWOL again this week. Actually, she's up at the Magic Castle discussing some new wonderful things that are going on up there. So hopefully we'll have a report from her when she comes back. She may even join us later in the evening. I'm not really sure. I called her cell phone earlier and said, "You're going to be here for the podcast?" And she said she was held up with meetings at the Magic Castle. So a lot of stuff going on up there, apparently. But I'm here with Ezra and the pups and assorted monkeys and everybody, you know, creatures, and we'll see who wanders in. So here we are. It's, I can't believe it. By the time this episode goes out, God willing, our site's, we've had some trouble with our site over the last few days.
Yeah, we're still working stuff out at the moment of recording, but hopefully it'll be better in a couple days now and...
Right.
Yeah, back up and running, and you'll be hearing these.
Yeah, and you'll hear the second part of Spike and Tony, which we had from last week. We haven't gotten that one up yet.
Nope.
Yeah, I gotta call our service guy and make sure that the site's up and running. Yeah, I just had some gonks there, but hopefully we'll be up and running, because this is we're looking at this being up around Labor Day, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Labor Day. Man, where'd the summer go?
Flew by.
It sure did. It went real fast. It seems like it was just Memorial Day. We were just having our Memorial Day barbecue, and then it's like one of those things I can't even remember us going on vacation, you know, but I must have, you know. So.
Yeah.
well, there was Comic-Con. That's not really vacation.
No, that's about all I got this year, though.
What, Comic-Con?
Comic-Con as a vacation, yeah.
I'm getting it next year, too. I'm actually going to be a guest at Comic-Con next year.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, I was just contacted by Comic-Con, and they said, "You want to be a guest?" And I said, "Yeah." That's wonderful. So that'll be fun, because I don't go to cons anymore as a pro. I just don't. It's not, you know, I love meeting fans, and I love chatting, and I love hanging out and everything, but it just comes down to, like, I got to work on the weekends. So,
yeah.
And when I'm not working on the weekend, I just have to, you know, I want to spend time with my family, you know. It's like, fans are great and everything, but, you know, San Diego, you can't really turn down.
So. Yeah, it's kind of a must for all professionals.
Well, that's the thing. Professionals and fans, everybody goes. So hopefully I can see everybody there. I know that New York is coming up, and I was talking to some guys today about... They were either talking about going to New York or to the Austin Film Festival.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
I was invited to the Austin Film Festival this year, but they said, we'd love to have you as a guest. And I said, great, you're going to fly me down, put me up. And they said, no, you have to, you know, fly yourself in or get in and pay your own way and everything. It's like, it's not much of a guest, am I? Do I get a badge? And I don't think I got a badge. And they would give me a discount on a hotel room, or tell me where there's a discount in a hotel room. It's like, I know where there's a discount on a hotel room. Harry Knowles floor.
Yeah.
I'll just go over and crash in his cave there, you know, where he does his web show.
Exactly.
He's got a fold out, something or other. I'm sure I can crash on the floor there. And I've done it before, and or I'll just sleep in his backyard. I've done that too. We watched one time a few years ago. We watched movies all night in his backyard till we passed out.
Really?
And by the time the sun was coming up, it was time for me to hit the trail.
So he has like a drive-in movie sort of thing set up in his backyard.
He did. He put up like a screen. His dad turned on the barbecue. He had one of those huge old oil drum Texas smokers. and just it was barbecue and movies all night. It was Hitchcock and King Kong and Adventures of Robin Hood. It was stuff like that. It was like really, really awesome. So, this year, I don't know. It's sort of like you can be a guest, and it's like I was a guest 10 years ago, and you guys flew me in. It's like, yeah, I don't have the money for it. This time, and I was talking to a writer friend of mine today, and I said, are they at least flying you in? He goes, no, they're not flying anybody
in. Wow.
If you want to take a holiday and go to Austin, it's like, well, I want to take a holiday and go to Austin, but
yeah,
I want to ride around and see friends and eat some barbecue and not necessarily talk. Now I feel like I'm slamming the film festival. It actually is a very good film festival, and I had a good time there. But I just can't do it. And New York Comic Con is that weekend, and I'm not going to that either. So.
Yeah. That always seems like a frustrating mess.
yeah, it is. So that's October. But anyway, we're still at the end of August here. So, but looking ahead toward fall. How was your summer?
So far so good. I mean, just working most of the time. I got the new job, so I've been settling into that, and just enjoying it.
Oh, cool. I didn't take a set vacation time this summer. I took kind of weekends here and there, mm-hmm. and tried to extend them out into long weekends. Like this last weekend, Henry Gilroy and I, Henry's a terrific writer and producer, we're working together on the new Hulk show.
Oh, okay.
We went up to San Francisco to see, to Oakland actually, to watch a Raiders game.
Oh, nice.
He's a big Raiders fan and I'm a Lions fan, and he had season tickets. Raiders were playing the Lions,
nice.
So for the day I was a Raiders fan.
Yeah, can't go into that section wearing a Lions jersey.
No, you can't.
No, not in Oakland.
But, the Lions played crummy ball, and they kept getting penalties, and they lost. It was a stunning defeat. It was probably the worst I've ever seen them play, and I don't know if it was because, they weren't home, or they just weren't into it. Stafford was out by the first end of the first quarter, actually, because he got a hand injury. So they had two other quarterbacks. And but it was nice seeing the Raiders win again, because I grew up in Oakland, or near Oakland, so the Raiders were like the home team. So it's always fun to see them win again.
Yeah, when I was born up in Berkeley, and they were a team up there then. And then when I moved down here, they moved down here, and I just haven't moved back up with them.
I know, yeah. Another reason Henry and I went up was we both have worked for Lucasfilm at various points in our lives.
Oh, yeah.
Henry recently on the Clone Wars series. He was like one of the very first guys involved and worked on it for the first two or three seasons, I think. And I think still writes the occasional episode for them. And when he was up there, he asked me if I wanted to write some of them. And I said, nice. That sounded like a lot of fun. And I worked there 20 years ago. almost 30 years ago. And on the very first thing they did, which was Ewoks and Droids. And that was like right out of school, and it was fun working up there, and it's fun to go back and see how the ranch has changed, and actually how it hasn't changed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We walked into the library, and my friend Joe Donaldson is the librarian there. She looks just the same,
some sort of fountain of youth, and
just as sweet as ever.
Into the Mill Valley area and stuff.
Well, yeah, it is kind of an enchanted little. A little dell there, it is the fairy kingdom. It's George runs his places across between, Oberon's fairy kingdom and the hideout of Hugo Drax, like a James Bond villain, a very benevolent James Bond villain, but it was great to sit on the main porch the porch on the main house, and just look out at the hills, which have never changed in the last 30 years and everything, or 28 years. Everything looks just the same. The fog spills over the hills just the same. And that's what's great, is that as long as he's owned the ranch, he's kept it pretty much the same. And, a vineyard here or there, a new building, but everything keeping in good taste and with the tone of the ranch. And it was just nice walking around. I felt like I was going home again. I felt like I had gone back to the house of a relative that I rarely see. and
no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to relax.
Yes.
Have a sweet tea.
Yes, that's right. It's only $17. Pay right there. No, it's no. There was a dining room, just as like I used to eat there every day for lunch, and the path leading up to my old offices, which another filmmaker has now, which is kind of cool. And
you got to knock on the door, go, I used to live here. Hey, let me check it out.
No, I didn't. I didn't really want to do that. I didn't want to bug anybody, and I didn't want to go running around the main house, And I knew George wasn't there because we heard early on that he was attending Celebration.
Oh, yeah, that happened this week.
Yeah, so that was kind of ironic. I was making myself to home in the main house. Mm-hmm. He was off in Celebration with Seth Green announcing his new Star Wars show.
That looks hilarious.
Star Wars Detours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looks so fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm friends with Seth, and he was telling me about it, and he actually showed me a little bit of it. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. That and the... Robot Chicken DC special, which will be out,
be
I think, next
too.
Week, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really funny. So anyway, I saw on YouTube shots of George coming out and Seth introducing him and them goofing around and everything. And
nice.
It's going to be a good show. So that's something to look forward to in the fall. Or I don't even know when they're debuting that.
It is kind of nice for him to expand into other areas of the Star Wars universe and like the comedy stuff and just sort of have fun with it.
Well, I think Seth and the other Seth MacFarlane, you know, mm-hmm. they both worked together on Family Guy. They've both proven themselves to be the biggest, funniest Star Wars geeks there are. And,
yeah, and they're fans of it, so they treat yeah. it with respect.
Yeah, they're not going to trash it. They're not going to say ugly things about it. A couple of years ago, somebody asked me if I wanted to be in a documentary about George Lucas betraying his fans, and it's like... No, why? How could you ask me that? You know, it's like,
wow.
You know, it's like, well, did you like all the prequel movies? It's like, they weren't the best things I've ever seen, but you got to understand, I worked for the man for yeah. 4 years. He gave me a job.
And how is not liking the prequels betraying your fan?
Yeah.
Like, he made his movies. They weren't our cup of tea. That's fine. He made them. It's yeah. his movies.
Yeah, it said, well, you worked for him, so you might have some insight. Yeah, I got some insight. He's a nice, quiet guy. He leaves you alone. He expects you to do your work. You yeah. never see him. He's a perfect boss. He pays well. And mm-hmm. at Thanksgiving, he gives you a turkey.
That's, what more can you ask?
Jesus, yeah. What? Yeah.
I haven't had bosses that good.
What?
I haven't had bosses that good.
No.
well, except for you.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, there's no turkey, but you get a glass of water every week.
Yes.
And occasionally there's shawarma or pizza or something, you know, so... Maybe we'll do a turkey dinner closer we get to Thanksgiving or something.
There you go.
Or turkey sandwiches or something.
Don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. But it was fun. Like I said, it was fun going up to the ranch again and just looking around. It's just so peaceful out there. And then it had been a long time. He had built actually another ranch.
Really?
A place called Big Rock. Big Rock Studio, Big Rock. A complex over there, which is where he houses his animation division. And I went over there, and they're making Clone Wars and a bunch of stuff over there. And I guess that's where Seth is making the Star Wars, the Detour show, because I know he's there, like, a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, it looked fascinating, and it looked like a big college campus kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And
I've always wanted to go there. I've always wanted to end up at Skywalker Sound. That's like a dream.
You should. I mean, it's they do a lot of work on a lot of pictures, and they're expanding. I think he wants to do more production and stuff like that. So it was just nice being in San Francisco again. Oh yeah, this is something I did that I had a lot of fun with. I took my brother Steve and his wife Lisa. I asked him about the Walt Disney Museum. They live really close to the Presidio. And actually, Henry and I ate lunch over at ILM on Friday. And I said, isn't this where the Walt Disney Museum is? And Henry said, yeah. And the next day, I asked my brother about it. And he goes, oh, yeah, you should see that. And I said, have you seen it? He goes, no, but we've been meaning to go. You want to go? And I said, yeah. So we go over to the Walt Disney Family Museum. And it is great.
Really?
It is kick-ass.
Wow.
It is everything as a kid I loved about Disneyland. Because it's the Disney of my childhood.
Oh.
And that is roughly the 10 years where my life intersects with Walt Disney, which is 59 through 58. No, 57 through 67. Well, he died right at the end of 66. So I guess I was about 9 years old when he passed away. But still, I could remember him on TV.
Yeah.
And he was on TV all the time. I actually met him at Disneyland once because,
wow.
You know, like 2 years before he died, my aunts took us to Disneyland and they had people, kids lined up to meet Walt Disney. And he was just kind of like there waving to kids and everything. And so I always kind of, he was like the first celebrity on TV that I took special notice of other than, you know, TV clowns and yeah. Yogi Bear and
exactly.
other characters like that, Flipper maybe. And this is all about his life, and it's all the vintage Disney stuff, and that to me is the most fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not to say the stuff in the last 25 years is bad. It's just that since 1988 or so, or 90, the Disney organization has become so titanic and has become such a money-generating entity that most everything that the current regime at Disney is pushing at everybody is from the last, what would that be, 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And from Little Mermaid on, you know, and that is like the Disney of the new. And so that is things like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast and mm-hmm. all the Pixar movies and Hannah Montana and the kid musical stuff that's on yeah. the Disney Channel now. All the old Walt Disney stuff has just been thrown away. It's just like pushed off to the side. You don't even see it anymore at Disneyland. Only little bits here and there. So I go to Disneyland and I'm looking around and, you know, Monsters, Inc. is fine and mm-hmm. Cars is fine and everything, but it just doesn't, you know, even though that strikes a lot with families and with adults and everything, it just doesn't have the charm of the old stuff to me. And I really love the old 2D animation and everything like that. So this place was made for me. It was the museum. It focuses on Walt's early life, and it goes up to his death in 67 and continues a little bit after, you know, to show how some of those later projects came to fruition. But there's a huge, huge layout of Disneyland that all lights up, and there's clips of the old cartoons, and it's all about the founding of the studio and good and bad stuff. There's some amazing stuff from his past that shows that it was not a bed of roses for Walt and his workers early on, because they were trying out new things. They were they had a little shop in Kansas City to make little animations for interstitials for silent movie houses, and that failed.
Mm-hmm.
And they left town owing everybody money. And then he went to Hollywood and he made short films mixing live action and animation, and those didn't pan out as well as he wanted. Then he created a character called Oswald the Rabbit, which was taken from him by Universal, by the guy, the distributor. So and who left with his animators as well. So the guy really had a run of bad luck. And right around the time where you figure he would have said, "I'm going to hang it up," or "I'm going to go work for, you know, Fleischer or mm-hmm. you know, Leon Schlesinger or somebody," that's around the time he came up with Mickey Mouse and just stuck to it, and you know, Mickey Mouse was the big hit, and just continued on from there. I think he learned some really valuable life lessons, because he didn't succeed right off the bat. He had to go back and struggle and work hard and try it again and try it again, and then things were going great. And then what I liked was he didn't shy away from the unpleasant stuff, like the strike in 1940 that crippled the studio.
Yeah,
and it really hurt him in a bad way, because I think he looked upon his people, right or wrong, and, you know, I don't think this is exactly right. You know, he looked upon them sort of as like his guys or his family or his coworkers or his, you know, like his team. And mm-hmm. most of the animators, you know, as most of them liked him. But they also said, you know, we need some benefits, and the guys at the other studios are getting retirement plans and health insurance, and here we just kind of exist on bonuses and salary, so how about it? And so that created a big rift between him and his workers and everything. And eventually he gave in and had to join the union, but it shows how ugly the union was to him in order to get him to sign up. And some of his own guys were pretty nasty to him. And ironically, after the strike, he had to hire them all back because they were all union employees, and that was in the contract. So he had to go to work and see guys who had turned against him, you know. But let's just say they didn't get the plum animation assignments anymore.
Yeah, so, I can imagine.
Yeah, well, It's interesting watching where personality and talent and business all kind of collide, and everybody has all sorts of stories about that. In fact, I'm hoping to get Floyd Norman in here soon to talk about his days at Disney. And he was about, he would have been about 15 years after the strike. I believe he joined Disney in the mid-50s. And but I would like to find out, you know, from him what his experience was, you know, because he did work with Walt the last 10, 12 years of his life and has a good perspective on that. So the museum was great, and so that was fun. And that's been kind of the tone of my vacations this summer, has been taking an extra day off here or there and just going on a 3 or 4 day weekend and trying to cram as much into as possible. So, which has been kind of good. And today I'm back to work with Henry, doing a Hulk Rider Summit. Those are intense. We work 2 days straight, literally from dawn to dusk, breaking new stories with our writer team, and coming up with good stories. I think the Hulk stories are going to be very good. They're a lot of fun, and show's going to be kind of surprising to a lot of people.
I can't wait.
Just a lot of fun. I saw a lot of artwork today. I can't really talk about it, but I was very impressed with the design and the way things are going. So as we chug our way through our program, I think it's time we turn our attention to some Twitter questions and see what the fans are talking about this week, if anything. So Ezra, if you'd cue the music.
Questions from the fans.
Yeah, thank you very much. Here we are with our world-famous Twitter feed, and let's see what people want to know about. We have one here from Paul Lykos, who says, if you had an opportunity to write one of the DC animated films, which story would you most want to adapt? I guess that's if I could adapt any of the classic DC stories. I don't know, they've done so many of them. They're doing Dark Knight as a two-parter.
Have they done any of the Teen Titans, new Teen Titans Marv Wolfman stories yet?
You know, they were talking about it for a long time, and I think they were going to do one. I think they had a script on one.
Yeah, like the Judas contract, or the...
Yeah, they were going to make that. I think there was a script on that. For a while, I was going to adapt Batgirl Year One, and then... We were working out the story on that, and then what happened was, unfortunately, the Wonder Woman DVD did not perform as well as hoped, so that kind of got Batgirl kind of relegated to the sidelines, so I didn't have a chance to finish up that. Everybody asked me about Killing Joke, but I've gone on about that, I don't think that would make a very entertaining cartoon. You know, I keep going back and saying, like, if I was going to write a direct-to-video, I'd want to make an original story.
Yeah.
And I've even talked a little bit about Heart of Hush or adapting the Hush story.
Yeah.
And I like that, and I think there is a chance to, you know, you could probably put something together from Jeff Loeb's Hush story and maybe flavor a little bit of the backstory that I added for some of his family and, you know, do that. But that would be interesting, but, you know, they're not really talking about that right now. I just like to go in and write an original story, you know, like the way I would for the comics. Take
the characters from the DCU and just write something new.
Yeah, just go in and talk to them and say, you know, something new. And I'm not all that particular, you know, like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Enemy Ace, Wanna Beast. You know, as long as the story is
good.
They had
a couple of those DC showcases where they did styles, like the Spectre one and the Jonah Hex. Those were really gorgeous. I'd love to see them do something along the lines of, some of those older stories or one of those, you know, like a Demon Etrigan and make it a little more sword and sorcery.
Those are great. I mean, like a Batman House of Mystery story.
Yeah.
Something spooky with Batman would be fun. Then that way you could bring in... Etrigan. You could bring in Constantine. You could bring in Dr. Fate, all the spooky characters, and do something like that.
I'd love to see a Sandman, the original Wesley Dodds one, done all like film noirish.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
So I'd rather do something original with the characters, but I don't, you know, at this point, I'm kind of book solid elsewhere, but it's a fun idea. Let's see. What else have we got here? Appa's Back says, pick up any sweet exclusive at San Diego Comic-Con, or what's your favorite goodie you grabbed up this year at the con? I went on and on about that, about how I couldn't get the Harley Quinn Polly Pocket. I eventually did get one. I liked the Death figure that Mattel put out.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really nice-looking figure, and I liked the box because it was Jill Thompson's artwork. Yeah. It had a really nice, very cool look. It was like looking at a little window into a comic book page. What else did I grab at the con? I got a bunch of books. I got a really nice book on the art of Pogo.
Oh, nice.
I got some more Mickey Mouse daily strips. That was mostly what I bought was books. I just took them up to my room, and I read Mickey Mouse and Uncle Scrooge reprints the entire time.
That's so great.
And the Jack Davis book was really great.
Nice.
And that's all I did. I just stayed off the convention floor. And next year I plan to do the same, even if I'm a guest.
I should lean more towards that.
What's that?
Just getting some books. I didn't really buy any books this year. I got a couple, like first issues from independent guys because I go down a small press alley and stuff like that.
Right.
I like getting their stuff. But, I mostly got a couple toys. Like, I got the regular show Mordecai toy for Emily because she worked on regular show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I got myself a Master Shake ceramic mug that looks like Master Shake.
Which nice. Really
nice.
Uh-huh.
But, I didn't get the Oswald rabbit ears. That's what I really, really wanted.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, I'm kind of on a Pete kick. I'm collecting figurines of Pete. The Disney character, you know, the big, huge, evil alley cat who was always beating up on Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Like, he's like the unsung Disney character. He's been in just about as many movies as the others, but there's not as much merchandise. There is a little bit more now because they're sort of merchandising characters like Captain Hook and the Big Bad Wolf and the Beagle Boys a little bit. And so you can find him on more and more stuff. And the latest thing I got, this wasn't at the Comic-Con, but a few weeks afterwards, we went to Disneyland. They have a Star Wars crossover line. And so they have a figure of him as Boba Fett.
Yes.
Which is really good.
That is sweet.
It looks kind of like Boba Fett in that outfit, but hey, who am I to talk? Actually, I thought he'd be more like Jabba because he's like a gangster, but they didn't have a Jabba figure. But that's pretty good. I like any version of Peg Leg Pete. He's terrific. At the Comic-Con, that was pretty much it. Yeah, for Comic-Con. So let's see. Derek Armio says, listen to some older Radio Rash. He's got any other good stories from visiting the set of Batman and Robin? No, other than the fact that it was fun going and seeing the crazy Mr. Freeze set and. Mm-hmm. I remember one time and meeting George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell. They were both really, really nice, and they were really, really nice to my nephew. And I just thought, geez, what cool guys. You know, Clooney is just like, he just took my nephew around and showed him all the sights. It's like, you're having a walking tour of the Batman set by Bruce Wayne.
Nice.
Man, it's really cool.
Well, I should ask the elephant in the room about that movie then. Did you see Schumacher's designs for his nipple-suited bat suits? And what did you think about that?
Well, here's what I think. I think he made certain artistic choices that he thought were fun. But it's all... I did see a lot of designs, but part of the more grotesque designs actually did not come from the movie. They came from licensing.
Oh.
Yeah. And I saw that I think Joel was unnecessarily vilified in a lot of ways because he tried to play ball with the toy company. And a lot of the toy company was submitting a lot of designs for... you know, the Batman suits and the villain suits and the vehicles and everything, because at that point, Warner's was kind of into playing ball with the toy company. Mm-hmm. And I do remember looking at a ton of designs that never made it into the film that were much more bizarre than the nipple one. I mean, they were ones where I guess they had been reading a lot of Spawn, so or Image Comics, because instead of just having like the bat scallops on the gloves, they had big old hooks on them and hooks on the boots, and I'm going like, you can't move in that thing. There are hooks and there are chains on everything.
Were they toys or fishing lures?
Well, they kind of, you know, six of one, but you know they were. You know, and I think they were looking at ways to integrate some of these things in there. And because I remember a couple of years later when we did Batman Beyond, they brought back some of the same designs and say, hey, we have these designs already made up. So can you get a few of them into Batman Beyond? And it's like, how about we come up with a good Batman Beyond suit and you come up with some toys and they can be kind of ancillary and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if the general public realizes that. There's sort of a backwards quality to some of that, like toys designing production.
Well, things. Here we go back again, you know, to the power of an individual creator. And that's somebody like George Lucas. And that is like any design that becomes a toy comes from his mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the toy company can say, well, those Stormtrooper outfits would be better if they had daggers on them or hooks or claws. And George says, no, this is the way they look. This is how the toy should look. So they go in and they do it because, you know, you're appeasing the master. He's the guy who you have to work with in order to ensure that you have a viable toy line. Whereas if you're working with a company and there is no creative head on the project, no, like the creator is not directly involved, you have to, you know, you kind of have to play ball with everything. And, you know, there people are more interested in the process running smoothly than, you know, perhaps every element of the integrity of the character as the fans see it. But somebody like J.K. Rowling, she had the same thing that George had, I believe, you know, like a power of veto over what the designs of the characters looked like. And I think that's important. So, but how do we get on that subject? What am I talking about here?
The Batman and Robin.
Oh, the Batman and Robin. Yeah, it was just really, I'm always fascinated every time I look around a movie set, you know. It's there was one day I was on the set where Mr. Freeze was spraying people with a gun, and Bob Kane was there, and he gave Arnold Schwarzenegger a headshot of Batman that he drew. Schwarzenegger looked at it and goes, oh, can he draw Mr. Freeze? And at that point, Bob had kind of like run off somewhere because I don't think Bob could draw Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, I don't think Bob could draw too much more than just Batman.
He could draw Batman and Robin and the Penguin, kind of, and the Joker, I think. But Mr. Freeze, he might have given it the old college try at some point. But it was like, you know. here we got another Batman question from Kevin Sigler, who says, what version of the Penguin is better, refined and civil or foul and cruel? I know it sounds odd, but you've written both. I kind of like refined and civil, or refined and foul, or and civil and cruel, you know, like you can mix them up a little bit.
Yeah, I always thought he was sort of like putting on a face to be the business, quote-unquote, legal businessman most of the time.
Right, right. I mean, I think that in Arkham City, he's back to being probably more feral than we've seen him. You know, he is kind of like a guy who's, like, the veneer of civility is stripped off. And I loved that they gave him that Coke bottle monocle. It's like somebody broke off a Coke bottle, just shoved it into his skin there, and just really, really hard-edged. But, you know, as he's been thrown into this kind of crap hole, he is what he is, and that is somebody who's very ruthless and very conniving and very vicious. So it's not like he's trying to hobnob with the Illuminati of Gotham City. He's just out for himself. Mm-hmm. I do like him when he's a little more civil, because I think you can get more out of the character that way, when he's trying to be, you know, a little more welcoming, but there's always the devious undercurrent to what he's doing. Maybe that goes back to the Burgess Meredith version of it.
Yeah, well, Paul Williams did such a great job.
Yeah.
It was just such a wonderful portrayal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Penguin an awful lot. He's sometimes less is a less as a villain than he is just sort of a supporting character. What's your favorite Zemo 10? What's your favorite Batman villain? Joker, of course. Joker's just, you know, I'd say he's like 50% of Batman's appeal. Turtle Guard says, how do you feel about the current redesigns of Harley Quinn? Many people I know hate them. They make her way too skanky. Well, you know, at this point, I'm just glad the kid is working, you know?
Yeah.
After when the new 52 came around, so many of those characters, the DC characters, were just sort of retconned out of existence, or they haven't happened yet, or they were changed kind of drastically and everything. So it's, I feel like, you know, they're trying something new with her, and you know, we changed her design for the games too. We gave her the little nurse outfit. We all just keep the black and red color scheme, or I guess now it's blue and red or something like that. They changed the color scheme. You know, look how many times these characters have changed their outfits throughout the years. Look how many designs Catwoman has had. She's gone from the skirt and the hat originally.
It took her a long time to settle on something that seemed at least acceptable in my eyes as far as a good design that wasn't just exploiting the, you know, girl imagery.
Right, right. I mean, originally she had just a big old cat head.
Yeah.
And then she had the long skirt and the mask and boots, which is sort of like an iconic look, the 40s look. And then the Julie Newmar-ish, you know, one-piece look in the 60s. And then for a while she had kind of like a Puss in Boots look with a tail and stuff like that.
Each version is definitely reflecting the age it's existing in.
Uh-huh.
And I think that has to be done with most cartoon characters in comics. I mean, you know, these things have been going on for 60 years now. Mm-hmm. They're going to get a little stale if you just keep them the same way forever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Jester suit Harley still exists. I mean, it's on toys and figurines and it's in the old shows and everything. I don't think anybody will ever come up with a better design than Bruce did initially, because the simplicity is what makes that character work so well. And there actually is a almost primal simplicity and an appeal in characters that are black, white, and red. I mean, look at Mickey Mouse. I think a lot of Harley is the same. So, but I think that this version is designed more to appeal to people who might have played the Arkham games. You know, they're giving her something new and everything like that. And it's only a matter of time before they change the suit back again or give her another suit or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just shake it up. Actually, the suit she wears in the... the actress wears in the stage show. It's pretty cute.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of the Harley two-tone Pied Piper thing, but she wears a mask and kind of like a ballerina skirt. It kind of suits the mood of the show they're going for. Like I said, she could be Buona Beast. She could be Rex the Wonder Dog. You know, like
Blue Devil.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters who are just sort of marking time in cartoon character limbo, waiting to be reinvented
I haven't even seen Detective Chimp running around in a while.
I don't know if he's part of the new 52 or not. Dave's Geeky Ideas said, would you jump at the opportunity to create proper series finales for some of the DCAU shows, like Batman's Beyond Coda and JL? No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, the last minute of Brave and Bold is probably the best ending I could ever think of, you know? And it's like Batman saying goodnight to everybody, and everybody in the DC universe is there with him. I once told Neil Gaiman, I'll probably never write the characters in animation again, because I don't want to... I said goodnight.
Yeah.
There they are.
Well, in that Coda episode sort of was... summing up like four or five different animated series around then. The Batman Beyond, Justice League, Static Shock.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and I'm not at Warner Brothers anymore. That's a big thing, folks. You know, I haven't been there in like 8 years. Mm-hmm. You know, not since I was
You're
on
still
any regular
doing
basis.
A little bit of work for them, like the graphic novel, but
Yeah. I mean, you know, I worked for DC for quite a long time in between then and now, but. As far as the animation goes, you know, that's other hands are doing that. So, probably no. Mm-mm. Let's see. When Tim is funny says, when will you be on the Fandom Planet podcast? Do you know that podcast?
No, actually, I'm not familiar with that one.
Not familiar with that, but maybe if they ask, maybe I'll do it. Electric VO1, our good friend Daniel Campisi says, do you still get ideas for past projects? Like an idea will come to you and you'll go, that would have made a great Tiny Toons episode. Yeah, you know, stuff like that happens all the time. You know, I don't think there's any chance of Tiny Toons being revived anytime soon, along with Animaniacs and or Freakazoid, those mid-90s mm-hmm. Warner Brothers Spielberg shows. They're kind of their time. And Steven has gone off to do all the cartoons with DreamWorks, and Warner's has changed and everything. So there's this kind of, the fact that they're not going to come back, kind of, I don't think about them as much. You know, every once in a while, you know, like the characters will just run through my brain or something like that. But,
do some of these ideas ever linger on into other projects and like sort of transform?
Sure. You know, I mean, I still think about the characters, you know, from time to time, but, you know, I never really say, gosh, that's a great Pinky and the Brain idea. I got to write that down because, you know,
yeah.
Who knows? I got to take that in a pitch because I just know they're not going to do that show again. On the other hand, I do think about Warner Brothers characters, mm-hmm. you know, and I will write down like a Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck idea because, you know, I worked on Duck Dodgers for a long time and they do still keep making both the Looney Tunes show and the occasional Bugs Bunny short. So I do, you know, occasionally like I'll think about those characters. Here's another one from Daniel. Also, who's the most difficult Batman villain to write and why? I always hear Riddler and Penguin. Yeah, they can be kind of tricky, but that's why that ties in with the other Penguin question. That's kind of why I wanted to make them more supporting characters when I worked mm-hmm. on Detective and Streets of Gotham, is that I felt, at least for me, that they worked better as roguish supporting characters and not entirely legitimate, but not doing a big plot every time you see them. That it gave it more of like a sense of continuity, like if I was writing a TV series where the villains are part of the show, kind of like, you know, in Smallville, Lex Luthor wasn't doing evil things in every episode. Sometimes he'd just be in the episode. He's mm-hmm. always kind of a, you know, a dark or, you know, villainous character, but sometimes it was just fun to have, you know, from watching the show, it was just fun to see his lurking presence there.
Yeah.
And that was the same attitude I took by making Riddler into a kind of a dirty detective and Penguin into the shifty club owner.
Well, I gotta say, Riddler has always been one of my favorite Batman characters, and that by far was the most interesting interpretation I've ever seen of it. Your interpretation is my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just most interesting.
Mine too.
Hi, baby. How are you?
Hi, everybody.
Oh, look who's here.
It's Misty Lee.
Yelling in the background, being annoying.
Hi.
Hi. Say hi to everyone. Hello. Hi. Hello to you.
Hello.
Hello.
You look beautiful.
You're very sweet. Thank you.
You are absolutely stunning.
Thank you.
I don't think I've seen that dress before, have I?
You just saw it the other day. I just wore it.
That's right.
You know what? I wore it while you were out of town, when the girls were here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, great. It's one of my $25 specials from the mall.
It looks good with the denim jacket and strappy shoes and
sort
everything.
Sort of a tie-dye purpley effect.
Why are we talking about this right now?
Because you walked in and I'm just making you welcome. I'm
going to fill in the audience.
See.
Fair enough. Not that they care what I'm wearing, but this is what I have on today. I just left the Magic Castle. I just had a meeting up there about a fun project that we're working on. And I'm assuming you're questioning?
Yeah.
Cool.
Just a few questions. Linus27 says, can't wait to see your new Hulk tune. Who is your favorite Hulk character and or Hulk comic story arc? Well, I like all the Hulk characters, and I can't really talk about the Hulks right now other than the fact that it is coming, and we're working on the show, and we're having a great time.
And
so
it's funny.
More about that.
Do you have a favorite version of the Hulk? Gray, green, red, purple?
My all-time favorite version of the Hulk, I swear to God, is the Hulk that was in Twisted Toy Fair Theater.
Oh, yes.
In Wizard Magazine. And, you know, like, trying to help Iron Man with his drinking problem. Oh, no, what Hulk do? Oh.
And then he puts on the Hulk outfit.
And the Iron Man outfit. Yeah. Just, you know, the simple-minded, you know, 70s Hulk. And, I mean, but as far as actually appearing in the book, I love Len Wein, Herb Trimpey Hulk. Mm. I mean, that's, you know, get better than that. You know, the poor misunderstood monster, and he's always being chased around by, you know, Talbot and General Ross and Rick and Betty and all that kind of stuff. It's great Hulk. And, you know, Peter David's Hulk was great too. You know, that was Hulk's a little more intelligent, a little more.
We should have had Peter David on here.
Yeah, he was in town, actually.
I know, that's what I just said. We should have called him and told him to come over.
Well, I talked to him yesterday, but he was just in and out.
Have you met him? He's awesome.
No.
He's awesome.
But he was just in and out. I was busy last night, and you were busy, so, and he was over, like, near the airport, so he couldn't have gotten over here.
Near LAX?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
he was over on the west side. And I said, just give us a little heads up next time, son, you know, like a week's notice.
Well, he calls us, hi, I'm here right now, come get me.
Well, he came into town real quick.
He's not an inconsiderate dude. I mean, he's totally great, but it's just, he's, like, very spontaneous, and he loves to just, like, go, because he's very kinetic.
Uh-huh.
And so he's always going, and he's sort of, like, here, and then he's going to go right to Dragon Con, I'm sure. Where he's going to be everywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's
what
this weekend,
right? What
the
hell is he doing in town? He must be working on Young Justice or something.
I don't know. I think they've wrapped, but I think he must be working on another project.
He's always got a
came in to do a project really quickly. He didn't know he was coming until like the middle of last week.
He's a cool dude, mm-hmm. and he's really engaging. We should definitely have him on here next time he's in town.
Revan 646 says, what do you think of the Arkham prequel being set in the Silver Age? I think that, you know, I can't comment on that because I don't know what it, I don't know if that's for sure. The rumor is that Rocksteady is doing like a Justice League set in the Silver Age, but I don't know that for sure. I'm not working on it, and so I don't have any comment on it. You know, I guess, like with everybody else, I'll see the game when it comes out. Let me think.
Where's Muncie?
He's over there, lying down. HMHMAH says, what villains would you like to see and cast by who in a Batman Beyond movie? Well, Alan Burnett and I actually did write a Batman Beyond movie with Boaz Yakin, who was going to direct it way back when, but unfortunately didn't get very far. And we didn't really use any of the Batman Beyond villains, and I really regretted that. And if I was going to use any of them, I'd use Ink would be great.
I like Sonar. He's always been interesting.
Sonar was great. The Jokers were great because I like the Batman had not had that much of an influence on Gotham City, but the Jokers were still around. And Blight was good, you know, because he had a direct connection to Bruce Wayne. And I don't know. I kind of got to write my Batman Beyond movie with Return of the Joker. I had a really good time writing that. Would you, Orlando Nunez 56 says, would you consider getting the DCAU writing team back together for a live action series? Oh, there's a lot of talent there. If we were doing a live action series, yeah, I think I would. Stan Berkowitz, yes. Bob Goodman is actually on a live action series, he's on a Sci-Fi Channel series,
Warehouse 13.
Warehouse 13.
Oh, yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
These dudes are so cool, you guys. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, you think a lot of people think, oh, well, when you make it big, you become a jerk. Clearly, Paul Dini's not a jerk. Clearly, he's fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
But so are all these other guys. You know, they're just nice guys who do great work. All of them. They're so nice.
Yeah.
I have a hunch that's what gets you the good jobs, being so nice.
Well, and doing good work.
Oh, doing good work.
Helps,
you know, because, I mean, the bottom line is people do business with people they like.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and you can be not as good as the next guy, but really super nice. And people go, you know, if it's between a shark who does pretty good work and you who also does, you know, pretty good work and they like you better, you're going to get the gig.
Yeah.
You know, it's just do good work and be nice.
Yep.
Don't be a flaming rhino.
No. Muppet Cop asks.
That's a great name.
Muppet Cop.
That's a good one.
It's like, well, that's like Bear on Patrol.
Yeah, I picture one of those pigs in a uniform.
Well, oh yeah, well, like Bear on Patrol, yeah. Link Hog.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Patrol Bear, get in here.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, Muppet Cop.
I'm going to change my Twitter name to Bear on Patrol.
Bear on Patrol? did you ever see those skits?
No.
Spazzy is an inept patrol bear, you know, and Link Hogthrob was his boss, you know, Patrol Bear. Take the prisoner and lock him up, and don't lock yourself
in.
That
sounds stupid. I just like the name.
Bear on Patrol. Yeah, it was great.
Bear on Patrol.
It was really good.
That's
it was
really
like
funny. Anything
like
on Patrol
show.
Makes me excited. I just, you know, swinging a nightstick and just kind of walking around, making sure everybody stays in line. Where the hell's Emily?
What's all this?
She's finishing some comics.
Tell her I was swinging my nightstick at her.
Okay.
anyway, okay. Muppet good. Cops. Good. Oh, sorry.
No, I was not participating in the podcast. Right. It's totally okay.
What keeps you inspired with new ideas, new experiences? Just, you know, getting out and looking at life and watching people and...
Bear news.
Bear news, yeah. You know, just watching bears on the news, you know.
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, bears
we've
are in trouble.
We talked about this on here before, right? How when there's a slow news day, they just said, well, where's a bear? Somebody go get a camera and turn it on a bear.
Oh, there was one up around La Cañada. Got hit by a car. They had to put it down.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's so very sad when I heard about that.
Who hits a bear with their car?
I don't know. Who hits Roger Slyfer with their car? He's still out,
poor
dude. Yeah,
that's not okay. Somebody at Spider-Man yesterday was showing me a video. We all sit around and watch YouTube videos before we're getting ready to go into a session. Uh-huh. And this guy's like, oh, I'm not going to tell you who it was. Because he's like, oh, check this out. And he's watching people fall on YouTube, which is hysterical. It's like America's Funniest Home Videos, and it's very funny. But he shows me this video, and everybody lived. Like, he's showing me these horrific things that happened to people, but they're fine now. Mm-hmm. And this one guy, and I don't know what kind of math/physics he was doing in his head, but they were driving, and he decided that he saw his friend coming on a bicycle, and he thought it would be real funny to lean out the car and slap his friend on his bike as they drove by.
Oh, my goodness.
But here's the thing. So he leans way out the door and kong, hits his face on a parked car.
Ooh.
Now, he's fine, okay? He's not fine. He was, like, had brain damage before. But here's what I would like to know. Like, that's amazing. It's amazing that he lived. It's ridiculous that it happened. I don't know how fast they were going. It's just terribly unfortunate all around. But here's the most unfortunate thing. On what planet is your arm long enough when you are driving down a street where you are far enough away to avoid a parked car, okay, to get your arm not only to the curb, but to slap your friend on the sidewalk? Are you Stretch Armstrong?
No, but that planet would be Mercury.
Plastic Man?
Yeah.
What kind of Plastic Man bullshit was this guy thinking he was going to pull off?
I don't know.
That it was just, he deserved to hit his face on the car.
Oh,
no, nobody does deserve to hit their face.
No,
let me clarify. I'm not saying. But you know what? If Darwin was right, let's chlorinate the gene pool a little bit, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take a simple class in physics.
Oh, my. A simple class in how long your arm is would be like, I mean, it's like, what can we do? What can we not do? How old is a child, I wonder, before they learn their reach?
Yeah.
You know, like they start to reach out and they start to grab the air and it's like, okay, my arm is almost a meter long. That's, you know, it's like, or 2 feet or whatever. I don't know. It's
my
certainly not from the center of the street to the center of the sidewalk for sure.
Yeah.
To slap. Now, don't get me wrong. Slapping someone as they drive by on a bicycle when you're driving by them is also kind of funny.
Yep.
You'll knock him out cold, though. He's going like 15 miles an hour. You're going 30. That's like 45 right there.
Bigger douche they are, funnier the thing is. Funnier it gets. But anyway, that's what we do when we're getting ready to go in and do a Spider-Man episode. Marvel will be so pleased I told that story.
Yeah. Last question.
Good contribution, Misty. God, I just walked in and brought it today.
It was a fun session.
Session?
Spider-Man.
Oh, yesterday you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no, I was at a meeting at the Magic Castle.
No, but yesterday.
Which was also fun. Yeah. We laughed a lot. God, I love the Magic Castle. I love Spider-Man. I love the Magic. I love everyone I work with. Everyone. I love what I'm doing right now. I'm doing so much stuff, and everybody's so cool. Ezra's awesome.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love it.
Just everybody's awesome.
That's
it's
good.
So great.
That's great.
What's your question? I'm
Stingray
like,
Travel says.
Yes!
With the recent hookup.
The answer to your question is yes.
Okay. With the recent hookup of Superman Wonder Woman, do you think superhero hookups could work in live action?
Yes!
Away from self-canon arcs. I guess that's... Can you do a movie about superhero hookups?
Well, I mean, I think they'd be talking about like the Justice League movie. Would it be fine to have random heroes that don't normally hook up?
Who cares?
So
if it drives the plot, then I don't see why.
How does
that
drive a superhero plot?
I don't know.
I don't need to see them kissing each other. I want to see them fly around, blow shit up.
I don't know. You know, it was sort of like in one of the Star Trek movies, like everybody's inhibitions went away, and suddenly Uhura is telling Scotty how much she loves him, and I'm going like, that's not right. I mean, they're pals and everything, but Uhura and Scotty, you know, it's like
well,
you know, Black. It's like Black Canary and the Atom, you know.
Right. Well, it's the danger zone because if you put a fan, if you put something together that's not a fan favorite, you're taking a risk. And if the fans can't see it and they don't make that leap or they don't like it or they like it too much, you're either stuck or you're screwed.
Well, you talked about Star Trek. You now have her hooking up with Spock.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Well, yeah, she's...
Yeah, in the last movie, they were a couple.
Yeah.
Was that Star Trek VI, The Apology, or whatever it was?
Yeah, no, the new one, the J.J. Abrams.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that one already.
I don't know. You know, like Superman, Wonder Woman. You
we
know
love
that,
you, J.J.
There was something really nice about that, that...
I need to go back into the Magic Castle.
There was something always kind of interesting about... Or appealing about the fact that, yeah, they should have been together, but they weren't. That Superman, I guess, you know, that he had Lois Lane. You know, mm-hmm. and that always sort of led credence to the fact that he was really Clark Kent. Mm-hmm. And that he was, his tastes were really, you know, that he would give it all up for somebody who was from his adopted planet. There was something very sweet about that. I think if you make these characters... It's almost like it's too good to be true. Like it's now they're literally a power couple, and life is too good for them. And that's why I didn't like the Green Lantern movie.
Yeah,
you know, Hal Jordan is handsome. He's skilled. He's brave, and he gets to be a superhero. I can't hate this guy more. You know, it's just he's hateable.
You said that before on here.
Yeah, I know. But it's the same with now. I kind of hate Superman and Wonder Woman. It's sort of like we're you know. Rock stars and a power couple, and you know, and Lois Lane is dating somebody else, and everything.
Well, they did that a little in Kingdom Come, where Superman old, and then Wonder Woman's like, yeah, hey, look at me.
For whatever reason, it doesn't really rankle me. I don't really care. Yeah. You know, I saw the shot of them kissing, and I go like, oh, that's fine. You know, and I did the whole, you know, little flirtation between Batman and Zatanna. You
and
know,
Wonder Woman, you had him singing for her in that cartoon.
That's right. Yeah. That's
remember,
right.
I was making
well,
fun of you.
Yeah, they're already having relationship things by that point in that cartoon, too. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought that was kind of interesting because Wonder Woman was seeing a warrior in Batman. That was the interesting thing because like she was respecting him.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I'm in favor of it then because it's, you know, you look at these the characters in the comic books progress in a certain way, but then every once in a while an outside influence really shakes them up, you know, whether that's God knows that the Warner Brothers crew and I have added, you know, bits here and there that have become kind of canon to the DC universe, but you know, the Superman radio show introduced things like Jimmy Olsen and Kryptonite into that world, and you take little bits, you know, from that. So if they did it in a live action movie where suddenly, you know, Hawkman has a fling with Zatanna and there's no Hawk Girl, you know, it's like, hey, and if it works, that's great. You know, that's fine. So I'm all for experimentation as long as it makes sense. All right. See you next time.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.